Blog Talk Radio.
Truly don't understand, do you? Hey, man, don't you realize a lot of us to make this thing work, man, we've got to get rid of the pimps and the pushers and the prostitutes and then start all over again clean. Because nobody's pushing me anyway, okay? I mean, not you, not the cops, nobody. I mean, you want to get rid of the pushers, I'll help you. But don't send your people after me. You can see that we can't get rid of one without getting rid of the other. We got to come down on both of them at the same time in order for this whole thing to work.
Because nobody's closing me out of my business.
What's happening, everybody? Had to do things a little different in this particular calling in experience. Had to adjust from the microphone to the telephone. Like the song says, we're going to work it out. So, what's happening is, this is Kay, Son, and Friends. If you somehow have landed on this place and not knowing where you are, right? I'm Citizen Payne. And this is a Thursday that we're going live because why not? Because Tuesday we're talking politics with the congressman and with political analysts and political insider Rick Thigpen. And that's Willie Hutch, you know, my man Willie Hutch. Brother's going to work it out. Song for the Mac. So check it. Our discussion tonight, we're not talking politics. You know, my mom used to get tired of that topic always being discussed. Certainly she was tired of it after so many years of being married to a guy like my dad who was thoroughly into civil rights, and the obvious extension of that is getting into politics when talking about people's rights. But tonight, we're not talking politics, my friends. We're talking art. Again, artistic arts, particularly actors, acting, and what people are doing during the time of COVID. Surviving artists, surviving, thriving, and creating during the time of COVID. And so we want to do a little bit more, a lot more of these things where we're talking to artists and other people, branch out the topics of discussion. Certainly Byron and myself being artists, that's something that appeals to us. And we had a great discussion last week with Byron's guest, Vera Katz. And this week we got the one and only Ted Lang. Ted Lang, that's right. Love Boat. That's My Mama. I remember from That's My Mama, most importantly, because my boy's mom was Teresa Merritt. So maybe I could get my boy to call in and surprise Ted Lang. Carl Cofield, director at the Classical Theater of Harlem. Actors Lisa Renee Pitts, Ashley Denise Robinson, actor, filmmaker Ken Stagels, and we got Pressy, Jerome Preston Bates, actor, director again, joining us this hour. We're going to be talking about the work, bringing Byron, who's the other actor in our threesome, as Wayne is the newsman and the artist consumer, and give us the point of perspective from the consumer. But Byron, what's happening, brother? How you doing?
Well, you know, you're talking on my favorite subject now. You know, I love politics and I love history. But, you know, when we get, as in Pinocchio, hey, fiddly D, an actor's life for me, come on. You know, Eric, we thrive, as they say, for the roar of the crowd and the thrill of the grease paint, the roar of the crowd. And that's what we live for. We want that adulation. But you know what? Once I leave the stage, once I leave the theater, I like my life to be private.
Right.
It's like an alternate world. Because everybody who sees an actor or a director or a filmmaker or a dancer or a singer, you know, they always think that we're about the party life. That's just one aspect of it. But most actors literally like a private life. You know, I mean, it's all that adulation wears off. And I remember Nikki Giovanni writing a piece about Aretha Franklin on that, the one where Ego Trippin' was on that album. And she says it so well. She says the adulation gets to a point where we want to hear one more song, Aretha, one more song. how many more songs does Aretha have to sing before she wears out? And you look at that picture of her and Charlie Atkins, someone posted on my page the other day. I remember when Aretha was so thin, she was kind of scary thin. She was trying to get that model look. And then you realize as she kept gaining and her weight, she was a lot happier, not trying to fit herself into a mold that the Motown and Atlantic tried to fit her into, but be Aretha. And when she finally transitioned, look at what we saluted her. That line
right.
with Detroit, and I mean, you can't imagine. That's almost like Imitation of Life. Remember that last scene where the mother of the biracial daughter who rejected her mom because she happened to be black, and it was like she came. Aretha came in a what was it, a white Cadillac? If I'm not mistaken, but when we salute our artists, and these
right.
are the times when, let me tell you, artists are not in a good place right now, especially actors. Broadway is shut down. Atlanta's film industry is crawling. I mean, even with Tyler Perry producing as fast as he can, it's still not the combine that we were used to seeing. But there's a silver lining. I got tired of watching the crap on television, which happened to be just cookie cutters of one program that was a success, and then everybody's got to have a show like it. But right now, as an artist, I'm as challenged to be as creative as I've ever been. And at 71, I'll be 71 years old next week. I'm more creative now than I've been in quite some time. And the reason why is because I've had to use my imagination to sustain my art. It was not about the money. It's about the art. You've got an anointing. Eric, we are anointed with the passion and the gift to tell a story and act
right.
it out on stage or in the film.
Right.
And we are most happy when we're in that state. And ultimately, I mean, like right now, I'm working on a show that is so powerful. It's called It Takes a Village. Now, just think about that, the title of that to begin with. It takes a village to do what? Raise a child. But it takes a village to keep a village safe, secure, healthy, and peaceful. And this is a story about COVID. Now, it's
right.
incredible because when you think about it, how many movies have you seen with black people telling the story of COVID?
Not many at all. Not many
That's
at all.
Right.
That sounds like a great, really great. Go ahead. Let me finish your point. Go ahead.
Yeah, but I mean,
saying,
I'm working on it, and I'm going to send you an invitation because I'm having a VIP showing of it tomorrow. Just it's the first reading of a public reading of the piece, but when I send you the prospectus, take a look at what I sent you because we have got to bring in the genius of those folks who are creating the art. And if you watched the Grammys
right.
the other night, my goodness. If it wasn't for
yeah.
us,
let me just jump in here if I can, Byron. Let me just jump
yeah.
in if I can.
Sure.
So what I wanted for me, the acting experience. You spoke earlier about the adulation and all of that, and that's all nice and it's a nice thing. But for me, really, what yeah. I found out as a theater actor, and these are moments that I think real actors, people that are really the craft is kind of like to me. Martial arts that you're trying, it's almost spiritual, and you're trying to, with any
yeah.
art, I think real artists, they try to get better and better within themselves. The thing is within themselves. Unfortunately, art for commerce, when you're presenting art
yeah.
for commerce and making people pay, all of these other things come involved to poison to a certain degree the purity of the art. So theater is where you find, for me, that magic that happens, you know, the magic between audience and actor, audience and performer. And I think for me, one of the ultimate states to get to as an actor, particularly performing on the theater or a performer, period, in front of an audience is where it ceases, the energy ceases to be an energy of performer audience. and the energy mm-hmm. becomes one. And energy becomes one between the audience and the performer are one, and where they begin to experience what you are experiencing as you play the character. They're feeling, they're drawn in so much that they're experiencing the emotions. Usually it happens in a small setting. The play that Jerome and I did that went off Broadway, called Jonan, first show that was done by all black cast there in about 6 or 7 years. But when we first started doing the play in a small intimate theater, I had a monologue and it was about family and this and that. And so there was a point that I achieved probably only one time during the show where I was doing this monologue and I could literally feel the audience on the edge of their seat. I had them in the palm of my hand, so to speak, feeling everything that I was saying, where I could literally say it. And now, folks, a message from our sponsor. I mean, that was the energy that I felt. It was a quiet in the audience, and they were listening to every word I said. And I think every actor, once you feel that, you work to get back to that feeling. Maybe to people who use drugs, it's like that first high or whatever, but it is certainly a high. It is a communing of people. And I think that what our art form does is that it allows someone, us to walk a mile in another person's moccasin, so to speak. It allows us to have empathy for other human beings. If you ever watched a movie about someone you didn't even know or someone you learned about or a character or a story, you know, you get to learn about other perspectives. And I think done right, it actually works to bring the world closer together, at least from my perspective. Yeah. You know, yeah. I don't know if you've experienced that, but I'm sure there are other actors that you worked with, I'm sure you experience it performing, you know.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, there's nothing like that thrill. But, you know, once you get that, tell the story. And I always remember Hosea Williams, one of my civil rights mentors. His daughter and I went to Hampton, Elizabeth Williams Omalami. And we were doing theater in Atlanta under the aegis of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and we called it People's Survival Theater. Well, as it turned out, we're doing the plays that we read in our black anthology and doing those plays. And one day, this is back in 1974, Jose said to us, he said, "Bye, Elizabeth, I don't know why y'all continue to do theater that ain't got nothing to do with nothing. You just take one story from the Civil Rights Movement and you'll have a hit for the rest of your life." Now, that was 1974. Now, you think about all the films and plays that have been done since then. I guarantee you 80 to 90% of them have been stories about the Civil Rights Movement. And when they were a hit. Selma, even Mudbound with, what's her name, the new queen of soul,
right.
Mary J. Blige. I watched Mudbound. And I didn't realize I was watching Mary J. Blige until the end. I mean, we have some brilliant stories to tell. And because we keep trying to mock or copy, you know, the cop stories, the Godfather stories, the stories that white folks love, their movies, you know, every last one of their movies that we've kind of enjoyed and given the awards to, we've had to almost copy some of that storyline just to get into the mainstream, but it's not our story. It's just a copy
right.
of somebody else's fantasy. Our lives,
right.
Every time Michael Jackson came out with a new video, it was like watching something fresh.
Right. Okay. Well, let me see. We got a couple of the guests online. Let me open some microphones up and let's welcome some of our guests. Now, I don't know who's calling from which number, so I'm just going to open this mic up, 508. How you doing? Who is this at the 508
Hey
number?
There. My name is Ashley Denise Robinson, calling from L.A.
Oh,
hey,
well,
Ashley Denise Robinson. Welcome to the K Sun and Friends Show. My name is Eric Payne, and that's Byron Saunders, my co-host there. And welcome to our show now. And let me bring in our other guests as well. We got everybody calling in. Everybody's chiming in now. Byron, say hello. Want to bring
hey
in
there,
our
Ashley.
Next. And who is this at 3106? Hold on.
Yeah, go ahead.
310-677. Who is this?
Hi, I'm Ken Sagos, and I was calling in. I was listening to you talk before you said anything. It was got quite interesting. So thank you guys for letting me come in.
Ken Sagos, how you doing? This is Eric Payne. We met with, that's Byron Saunders. Byron, say hello.
Yes. Hello, my friend. Welcome aboard, Ken.
And we, and we also have Ashley Denise Robinson as well. Ken Sagos, Ken, I met you a long time ago with Jerome Preston Bates. Ken Sagos
in New York,
is an actor.
It?
Yes, it was, sir. An actor, filmmaker. Let me point out, Ken Sagos is a, if you are a film buff or whatever, Ken, I think you, one of the larger roles that I saw you do was as Big Baby in Rosewood, right? And of course, your career spans much greater than that. But just so people get a sense of who you are, and I'm sorry, Ashley, Denise, let me allow you to introduce yourself. And I'm sorry, Ken, let me back up and say, Ashley, you can introduce yourself and tell us what your acting career has developed into or is developing into. You're in L.A., so you made the trek. And we've got
So I've been in L.A. almost 3 years. I was living in New York City before. Went to school in London for some classical theater training. And, I've been doing a lot of indie stuff when I was in New York and out here in L.A. as well, looking to get into more network things. I'm Jamaican, so I have a lot of jobs. So I act, I write, I do some copywriting as well. So kind of a multi-hyphenate, trying to express my voice through these uncertain times.
Well, there you go. There you go. We're going to leave it right there because that's what we're going to get into in a little bit further. Let me bring our other guests on. So this is a 310-488 number. Who is this that we have on the line?
My name is Ted Lange, and I'm quite familiar with the work of Ken Sagos.
Oh, my big brother.
Okay, Ted Lange. So you know you have to get your props if people don't know who you are, sir. My name is Eric Payne. This is Kay's Son and Friends. We want to welcome you and Ken, everybody, to the show. My co-host there, Byron Saunders. Byron, say hello to
Ted and I are Facebook friends, okay?
Okay.
We stay in contact with each other. And here's a piece of history that I don't think anybody else knows, but he shared this with me a couple days ago because I had talked about and celebrating theater in Los Angeles. And it came about because we were talking about Nick Stewart. Ted commented on my history about Nick Stewart and the show Ebony Showcase Theater, and lo and behold, Ted revealed that his father worked at that theater.
When I was 9 years old, I used to go see my dad on stage.
Yes.
At the Ebony Showcase.
Yes.
Wow. Well, and anybody listening doesn't know Ken Lange is, you should. Go ahead.
This is Byron. Because the connection of our history, our storytelling, and passing the baton, because had Ted not set that on my page, on my Facebook page, it's a piece of history that we need to try to connect because it links us. East Coast to West Coast, Broadway to L.A., and across the country at our theaters that are represented in our African-American communities, because then it was called the Chitlin Circuit. But guess what? It's still part of the circuit. It's just raised above the Chitlin line. That's all.
Got it. All right. We got
it's
three other people
Ham
want to bring in.
Ham hock. There you go.
We got a couple other people we got to bring in. Just want to say, if you don't know who Ted Lange is, you should. And allow me, Ted, to go back. Isaac from the Love Boat. For me, you know, that's my mama because Teresa Merritt's son was my roommate in college. So there's
that
degree
right?
of separation. Yes, Dennis Hines. Benji was one of the sons. Dennis, Norman, Denise. And so that's our degrees of separation. And of
oh,
course,
wow.
you
that's
know, the Griot.
Amazing. I love it.
The Griot Network is on TV, and they've been running a lot of movies from back in the day that we all love and some of us grew up on, Friday Foster being one of them. So, you
Whoa.
Know, I'm watching a whole lot of stuff. Let's bring in another guest at 646-765. Who is this on the line that we have? Hello.
Hi, everyone. My name is Carl Cofield, calling from Lenape Land in what's known as West Orange, New Jersey.
There you go.
Lenape Land. You broke it down.
Hey, Carl.
Hey, Ashley. Hey, Ted. Hey, everybody. So it's nice to hear everyone's voices.
Carl, welcome. My name is Eric Payne. This is Kay's Son and Friends. There's my co-host, Byron Saunders. Byron, say hello to Carl. He's in my neck of the woods.
We probably crossed swords before, but hey, this is where the party begins, right here. Okay?
That's right. That's right. Now, let me bring in Jerome. Jerome,
yes.
Preston Bates. We'll bring in Press real quick. Press, say hello, as I'm going to bring in your last guest, but say hello, Press.
Hello to everybody. I'm happy to see everybody joined in. Can you hear me, Eric?
Yeah. Yes, I can hear you.
Okay,
Jerome,
well, hello
Preston
to everyone on the West Coast and East Coast. I'm so glad you joined in, and I'm just overjoyed with delight to hear this conversation. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
And let me just bring in our last guest, and this is, I believe, Lisa Renee Pitts. Is this Lisa Renee?
That would be me. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hey, Lisa.
All right. Welcome to the K-Son and Friends show, Lisa Renee Pitts, another actress, and I believe, are you based in Los Angeles as well?
Yes. Well, I'm a native New Yorker, born and raised by way of New Jersey as well, but I'm now based in Los Angeles. Uh-huh.
Uh-oh. New Jersey represent. Okay. So the
yes,
topic
indeed.
Of the conversation here, thank everybody, welcome. Thank you for joining. And as Press was discussing, the topic of the conversation is artists creating and surviving in the time of COVID. So I think Ashley, you were talking about a lot of jobs that you had to survive. You got to have a lot of jobs to survive as an actor anyway. You know, we're always trying to survive. But what are some of the suggestions or things? Carl, let me go to you because theater in this time is particularly difficult. How have you been coping and the people you work with at the Classical Theater of Harlem?
Yeah, let me give a little context. Yeah, I have the privilege to be the Associate Artistic Director of the Classical Theater of Harlem, obviously in Harlem, New York. And much like other theater companies, we've had to make a big pivot. So we want to serve our community, the Harlem community, and bring arts to them. So we've gone to a digital platform. But one of the things that we're most proudest of is managing the resources to keep everyone covered with paychecks. We haven't had to furlough anybody. We've actually taken this time of reflection to game plan for what theater will be post-COVID or in the midst of COVID. So we've been commissioning a lot of writers. We got a world premiere coming out by a brilliant brother named Will Power. Some of your listeners might know him from The Seven, Fetch Clay McMahon. He did the Stagger Lee story down in Dallas Theater Center, so we're whipping up something with him. So we've been using the time to be introspective and reflective and prepping for how to make theater with a COVID landscape.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose theater is obviously hit the hardest in this time. As filmmakers, Ken and Ted, What's the situation on that end? I mean, I've been speaking to other filmmakers as well, but what's your perspective about this difficult time in the industry from a film and TV
aspect? Well, the interesting thing now is the technology and the things that you can do. I just did a film stage version of Satchmo at the Waldorf for a theater in St. Petersburg, Florida, and I never left L.A. I did it through Zoom.
Wow.
I did it through Zoom, and we filmed it, and then they ran it. They streamed it on their thing, just like you would go on a Wednesday night and have a matinee and an evening show. That's how they streamed it. So it was fascinating. I worked with a guy named L. Peter Callender, who was an amazing actor who did Satchmo and did the whole thing. I was telling Jerome about it because Jerome also did the play. But that's one of the things you can do now. Because of COVID, they've moved this technology forward. I did another show called Myth of Control, which was a guy got 8 filmmakers together. He was in D.C. My actor was in New Jersey. The cameraman was in Jersey. The DP was in London. And the set designer was in Paris. And we all met. And I could see on Zoom the camera lens, through the camera lens, and we shot this thing, man. It's just amazing the stuff they're able to do then.
Let me, Ken, what's your perspective about that?
It's basically the same thing. I've done 4 plays. I wasn't working in a play until Ted wrote something for me. I've done 4 plays and in the United States and 2 plays overseas. So, it just like Ted said, is that, I was doing a play online where 2 of the actors, one was in Europe and the other one was in Spain, and then the other 4 of us was here in L.A. And it brought us together, and so that's what I've been doing. I've been doing staying busy. I refuse to go negative and just staying busy.
I hear that.
And write.
Yeah. Tell them about this film.
That's what you have to do. Ashley and Lisa, I'd like you guys to speak to your experiences auditioning during this time, if you can. I know my experiences, everybody, we've all got to put ourselves on tape now. What's been your guys' experience with that challenge? let's call it.
And Lisa, I don't know if you've experienced this pre-COVID, but most of my auditions were self-taped anyway in Los Angeles. It may be different with the Union Project, but most of my auditions were self-taped, so it wasn't different. It was kind of continuing what I was doing before. There are a lot more auditions, and I've actually booked like a ton of work since kind of November, which I've been really grateful for because I didn't wait. I wasn't, when this whole thing started, a year ago? Now I was like, let me pivot, like we were saying before, and let me just adjust to what is now instead of quote-unquote waiting for things to open back up, because I was like, oh, that's not happening. Like, we're not going back to any kind of normal anytime soon. So I was actually really fortunate to have a copywriting job where I was, writing ads, Facebook and Instagram ads for kind of online business entrepreneurs and kind of learning about that world and learning how people are doing more online business type stuff. So staying involved and keeping my ear to the ground with that. But, yeah, I mean, auditions have just been different, and I feel more comfortable with casting, asking them, hey, like, is my eye line okay? Or, can you hear me okay? Like, maybe asking things that I probably wouldn't in person, things that I would feel a bit more anxious about. But it's everybody's adjusting, so it's kind of nice. It kind of levels the playing field. Yeah, Lisa, what's been your experience with it?
Well, I think I'm just the opposite, because prior to COVID, everything, I was going into the casting offices. So when COVID hit, prior to that, I was going into the casting offices, and, it was like you had to really beg to get your stuff if you weren't available to go in to ask, would you take a self-tape? It was just really unheard of. So when COVID hit, I turned into the director, the producer, the costume director, buying all of the equipment, turning the whole apartment. I don't have an apartment anymore. I have a studio, where I do, put myself on tape. So it was a big transition, But I made it through, frustrated and all. I feel comfortable with it now. And I also wanted to add, in regards to work, I was blessed because I do a lot of voiceovers. Particularly, I work in audiobook narration, which I work from home doing that as well. So that's kept me working as well as being creative, narrating these books about social justice and faith-based books and sci-fi and different things like that, and being allowed to work from home. So that has been
that's
my
great.
COVID experience. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's
wonderful.
Press, what's your experience as an actor director actually here on the East Coast with those listening here?
Well, in the last 12 months, I'm pretty much piggyback off what Lisa said. I've been building a studio in the home, and today I had a taping, trying to figure out WeTransfer, because I work with a buddy a lot from his studio, and now the files are too big to send to the agent, and they want you to put them through WeTransfer. So,
right.
You know,
okay.
But I've had tons, huh? But I've had tons of plays all over the country, new plays. One on deck now is Greenwood about Black Wall Street. That's coming up, a brother by the name of Coolidge. That's on deck for the anniversary of the destruction of Black Wall Street. I got a film coming up, Papa's Pain, based on the HBO short of 12 years ago. Now they're making it into a feature. And so, but man, I tell you, mostly it's about, like Lisa said, getting more equipment to do more things, to do the voiceover work. That's coming up next, and just getting that together. Other than that, you know, plays, some of my plays, screenplays, and but I'm once again, I'm excited about this crew of talent that you have in the room tonight.
Right.
I'm just overwhelmed with joy. So,
thing that's really, I find that's really great is that we are being forced to learn the inside outside, from the technology to the stage, because imagine we're the pioneers, okay? Pioneers in early television had to figure out, how do you put entertainment in a box?
Mm-hmm.
And because Zoom is just that box, we are being guided to accept technology as technicians on the stage, behind the camera, in front of the camera. And you're right. Our home, our little cubicles in our space where we are able to create our little in-house studio, it is amazing, because this is forcing us to use our imagination. And there's a line in The Miracle on 34th Street. Now, y'all probably remember this. Santa Claus is talking to the little girl. She says to the little girl, you know what the biggest nation in the world is? She says, what's that? He said, it's the imagination. And we are being forced to use our imagination. And it's wonderful.
Amen.
I have to say that's true, because I've learned how to paint since we've had this pandemic. And I've also learned that I'm not a painter, but I've learned that if you go out and buy an expensive frame and put in that frame, now I have a masterpiece. Everybody want to know, where did I get it from?
Excellent.
$200 frame.
Yeah, right. So that's what everybody does. I mean, the artist in us is the creative artist is trying to come out. You said you tried painting, Ken, but that's kind of a natural extension of being the artist, right? I mean,
yeah.
You know, people might try different art forms or creative outlets that they had never tried before that they've always wanted. I've thought about taking up guitar lessons again, because it's something I've always wanted to do.
Yeah. I bought a bass guitar in October.
All right.
See, there you go. Have you guys, let me ask you guys, have you found that this is in fact making you more creative? Has this kind of time in the tool shed, you know, in the lab, as the kids say, has it helped you as an artist to, I think one of you guys were saying, the checking your eye line and all of these encompassing things that you learn when you get on the set and you book the job, right, that would have been helpful to know previously? So you're not as green, or if you're a person that's just working, or it's your first day working, you know, want to get those jitters out. Have you guys found that having to be this self-reliant has helped you with the work?
For me, I found that I don't wait for Hollywood to discover me anymore. I discover myself, and when Hollywood get ready, they'll come to me. And so,
yeah.
And that's what I've been doing. I've just been doing a lot of work. I picked up a harmonica. I don't need it all. So.
You can do seven guitars.
That's how it really forces us. And the technology nowadays, Ted, you spoke about how the technology is allowing us. I mean, you know, you could speak to the fact that when the technology, when you needed like, you know, 40 people on a film crew to really make a movie, you could. And it was a lot harder to be an independent filmmaker back then.
Yeah,
in,
now, you know, you don't need that anymore, and you don't need rolls of film anymore because it's all done on a chip. And I've written a lot of plays, and I've put four of my plays on YouTube because I needed an outlet, so I called up my actor friends, and I picked out these four different plays that I wanted to put on YouTube. And that's what we did. We did it through Zoom. And then I had an audience because I would invite people to the Zoom reading, you know, so that the actors got a sense and then the audience got a sense of what the plays were. But I've got a play called Shakespeare Over My Shoulder, another one called The Tears of Shylock. Blues in My Coffee is my Black Lives Matter play, and I have a play called Four Queens, No Trump. If you type in my name and you go to YouTube, you'll see those plays if you're interested. So, yeah, you know, it's a question of exercising your right to be an artist.
Mm-hmm. I have a question
I'd love to pop in. I did a play that I wrote and directed and did everything but play the other character for in 2019, and we filmed it. So I had, you know, this film of this play, and then I decided that we could do a digital presentation of it. So what we did is we played parts of the play, and then me and the other actors came on live in Zoom and did other parts of the play. So we kind of went back and forth between the... It was like a mixed media thing. So we did like showed portions of the film's part of it and then doing it live as well. And it was like a really cool learning experience and also getting a bigger audience because we streamed it from Zoom to Facebook. And so learning how to do all that and the ins and outs and all that was really cool in addition to being able to perform theater in some way.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
right. So then...
One of the things that's really happened, I find, both posts within the film and the live theater platforms, because of the shutdown and the COVID protocols, making money off of the industry now is almost like we're all in the same field. There's a leveling of cost factor. New York can't open up but 25% of its indoor opportunities, so you can't make money there. So we of the frontier people, consider us frontier folks, figuring out how do we navigate beyond after SAG and the Actors Equity, because they're in a fierce battle right now trying to determine how to use this platform for their industry agents, talent, and the market itself. We're really Underground Railroad right now. We are creating a new model of how to tell the story, get it out to the public, and now we have to figure out beyond the unions, monetizing it so that it keeps us alive as not struggling artists, but artists who are using the media, the platform, and your God-given anointed talents to sustain yourself and your family.
Mm-hmm.
So where are we leading towards now? Because this you're the Illuminati, okay? We are in this room, in the upper room, and we got people listening, and they're loving what you're saying because it's like, oh my goodness, how come I didn't know about this? Well, the mainstream ain't gonna tell it, so we're gonna have to tell that story and punch it out there to get it to our audience, an audience that is really wants more than what they're getting fed on TV right now. I'm so sick and tired of virtual shows and, you know, lifestyles of the rich and famous and my God, housewives of wherever. Tupelo, Mississippi. Come on, y'all. You see? Because we got stories we can tell. But we got to figure out now how do we produce it, monetize it, and make livings out of it. And I'm telling you, we are the answer. We have it. And this group right here is a solution.
Yeah,
there you go.
I got a big question that I want everybody to think about. How has this last year and these last 4 years affected you as artists of color, African-American artists? We're all African-American artists, I assume, on here, of black people of some descent or of color. So how have you guys processed all of the feelings? All of the feelings of this time, on top of having to deal with COVID, on top of being black in this industry.
The first thing you have to consider is now when we say the police ain't right, we're not getting pushback from the white folks.
Right.
You know, I can't watch Chicago PD anymore because it's a fantasy. It's, you know, the thing is shifting, and white people are learning that they have to share power. They don't want to share power. That's why this little kid went up in Atlanta and started shooting people. But they have to learn to share power, and that's what Biden's doing with a woman of color as a VP. And
right.
his cabinet, they're sharing power. And the Republicans, and I have to be specific, these guys are trying to stop it. That's old guard. That's old school. So now when I talk about stuff about characterization or story ideas, I find that they're a little more receptive because they realize they don't know what the hell they're talking about sometimes. So that's good news.
Mm-hmm.
Amen. Amen.
The powers that be have a little bit, are they get a little bit more sensitive to our issue? That's what it sounds like you're saying to me, Ted. Has anybody else felt that way or had those feelings from, I don't want to say the others, but, you know.
Hi, it's Lisa. I would say yes. I mean, this last year was a very trying year. However, but a mold was broken. There was a lot of good conversations going on. I know specifically the agencies that I work with. I have three for different aspects of my career. And we would all have, they all presented these online forums where we talked about all of the issues that we as, you know, African-Americans were having in the industry that we were asking for, things we were asking for, even being on set, you know, to have someone that can do our hair, you know, just any things that are specific to us as African-Americans that we were missing. These conversations were going on, and it was wonderful, and they were listening. We were doing all the talking, and they were listening. And my experience now, I'm seeing more opportunities. You know, we still have a long way to go, but just more opportunities, and people are listening when you speak about the powers that be.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I've seen the doors open up in so many areas, but it's like Brother said previously, now we as creatives have to create and go on inside the doors because nothing's going to be handed to us. But everything from being nominated for awards to in the theater industry, Ruben Santiago Hudson added in the creative position at Manhattan Theater Club to all kinds of things. I was involved in a play headed to Broadway, Thoughts of a Colored Man, and I thought in the last year, boy, what incredible material for that writer to begin to even enhance his story because his story was leading towards what happened in the last year anyway. So now it's even more, but I mean, in so many areas I've seen, you know, the doors begin to open for to grab a bit of that power, to embrace that power, but also can't be handed to us. Obviously, we have to walk in. But in so many, you know, I work a lot in theater. I work in television and film, too, but mostly in theater. And I've seen some doors open where African-Americans have been put to the top of the list to be involved in choosing certain plays and being involved in creating certain plays to go forth.
Mm-hmm. Also,
I
just think that we have it, and we can't just grab hold to it. We got to hold on to it, and we got to teach those that's coming behind us to hold on to it. Because if we don't teach them to hold on to it, it's going to slip away and become what it was yesterday. And that's what I don't want. I don't want them to let it slip away. Because we got something now. And when I say we got something, that's exactly what I mean. We got something, but we deserve a lot more. So we got to hold on to it and not let it go.
That's exactly right. And you hit out such a great point because, you know, I think to me, because of the ease of the technology nowadays and the ease of distribution outlet nowadays, maybe some coming after us don't realize the struggles that not only we did, but certainly your generation, Ted, that plowed the way. You know, each generation, you know, breaks down a few more doors for the next week.
Yeah, well, I was listening to the thing about the hair and all of that. I mean, I was, when we were doing Love Boat, they wouldn't even do my hair. They'd come by, you know, for a touch-up, and they'd always say, your hair looks
fine.
Yeah, your hair looks fine. And then I looked on the TV and I saw lint and everything else in my hair. You know, so then you go, when they come to you the next time, they say, yo, your hair looks fine. You go, no, let me just take a look in the mirror. You know, because you can't get mad because then they don't want to see an angry man on the set. That's a whole nother area you can get into.
Right.
But it was how to navigate for what your needs were when you were an actor, you know what I mean, in a television series, and you kind of had to bring them along.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We have to be the artists, and we have to teach them as well. We got to teach them on top of everything else, right?
I was just going to say that I found that I've stood my ground a bit more and asked for things that I previously thought was me asking for too much, but I'm thinking, no, Ashley, you can totally ask for this. So I was on set in like November, and you know, I was asking about my hair, and I said, you know, I was like, these are the products that I would like for you to get my hair for you to get for my hair, and they went out and got them. And I think previously I probably wouldn't have even asked, you know, I probably wouldn't have even been like, oh, can you know, or been like, oh, I'm so sorry. It's like, no, this is what I need, so that you don't ruin my hair on set, and also making the other people aware of what you need and making them like holding them accountable. And because I've had to kind of tune out some people who are like, I am so shocked at this country. This isn't my country. I'm like, where have you been? I mean, and they've been, you know, they've been hiding under the rock of white privilege, right? Or even people who are of color, but still somehow benefit from white privilege, right? And it's, you know, I feel like these last 4 years, SNL did a great sketch on it when it was a sketch about the night that Trump was elected, and there are like all the white people in the room are shocked, and the two black people are like, yeah, like this is America. This is what it is. These racists now have a leader who thinks and talks like them. Of course, this is what's happening. So it's been interesting in a way, you know, still fighting, still moving forward, but also sitting back and seeing how people who have been so safe under this cloak of privilege are reacting. And I'm like, yeah, this is what we've been going through. This is what we've dealt with all of our lives. Surprise. Like, I'm sorry that it's so shocking to you right now, but that's what it is. And so it's keeping people accountable and keeping them aware of this is our experience and this is what's going on, and giving voice to that and expressing that.
Yes.
Yeah. It's seems that also, too, maybe union-wise and just industry-wide, there, like we spoke earlier, there's more of a sensitivity to it, but certainly in this, in the areas of support where you need it from, like getting more, we're talking about, let me talk about behind-the-scenes people now, getting more black hairstylists, black wardrobe, black makeup people to be able to do, you know, when you have people of color on the show, that this is what you're doing, right? So, you know, working to break down those doors. You know, I worked a lot with Spike early in my career. And the one thing you could say, a lot of people could say whatever they want to say about Spike, but there are a lot of black people that are in the unions behind the scenes that would not have been there had Spike not, had not demanded that they let these brothers and sisters get in the unions. And so having our people that reflect our needs, the needs that you ladies are talking about, and like Ted was talking about, I've been on sets too where the makeup person just come and say, oh, you know, we don't have any light, but it looks like they ran out all out of Light Egyptian, so you know they don't have any more makeup to put on.
Light Egyptian.
So, I mean, but those are the issues that we have to face. We're running out of time a little bit. We're getting close to the end of the show, but let me ask you guys. Do you think that the projects that are being created as of late, you know, everything seems to be affected by what's going on in real life, right? So the Obama years, there was a certain amount of artistic movies and projects put into place that obviously are seeing fruition now. I'm thinking of Judas and the Black Messiah. I'm thinking of Ma Rainey. Do you guys see how or have any opinions about how the temperature of the country affects the art and the projects that are getting done? Anybody can jump in.
Well, I think one of the things, there's a new insult that they do to African-American actors, which is they let Africans or English black folks play the American hero.
Here we
and
go.
That's you're asking now. I mean, that's what
you took the words right out of my
Messiah
mouth.
Film, huh?
You took the words right out of my mouth.
That is the new insult: is to be African American, go in to read, and then they say, "Now we're going to get an Englishman that can do it." And they're doing it to white actors too. I mean, you know. They do the same thing in white actors, but they have, like, what they call the flavor of the month. It used to be stand-up comedians, and thank God when I first started, it was New York actors. But at the time, I was in L.A. I had to go to New York, and then when I came back, I have a lot better time getting into auditions. But, you know, they keep changing this thing. But if you look at the Chicago 7, the major roles are English boys. Those aren't American actors. Sacha Baron Cohen, Eddie Redmayne, those guys are not American. They're English.
That's
so, and the white guys are going through it, too.
Yeah. Ted, I'm going to spin off on what you're saying, Ted, and add on to. I think, and I've been saying this for years, you know, when a brother comes over from England, his dialect doesn't sound like black, American black. When they go in to meet these agents and these managers and these producers, they sound white. I mean, you know, you come with an English accent. That's what's triggering in these people sitting in the position, these power players. What's in their mind is they're hearing an English accent, equating that with a European sensibility. This is me talking now, equating that with a European sensibility. So therefore, these are people that are easier to – these are black people that I can relate to easier than the average black person. So let me hire someone like Idris, great actor, to play a thug out of Baltimore where all of us thought he was from 125 and St. Nick. And to find out, you know, that he was a British brother. And he played it really well. But check this. I know a lot of brothers – from 125 and St. Nick that are actors that could do just what he did. No disrespect to the brother, but I'm saying when they walk in with these dialects and with these accents, they automatically, to me, seem like they get a little bit more, you know, a little bit more attention because of this.
Yeah, preference. They get a preference.
Negro. Yeah.
Well, you know, Eric, part of that is being played out in real time with the princess, Meghan. Think about it. English racism engaged the racism in this nation. Not now. They couldn't accept Queen Catherine. And thank goodness we can reverse it. And I don't want to see another costume designer coming out of England talking about the English aristocracy. Because that's what, you know what I'm saying? Think about it. We all either we have one of those shows or God bless my Jewish brothers and sisters. But you know how many more Holocaust movies you're going to see?
Yeah.
Okay? Because
right.
I think the Native American Holocaust was 100 million. The African-American Holocaust. Come on now. Once again, tell the story of our movement, and you will make it a hit. We our fantasies are not couched in Walt Disney.
Right.
Yeah.
We
are a different kind of fantasy. If I see another queen story, another medieval story, I'm gonna jump off a building, man. I'm tired of seeing medieval. What was the series everybody was talking about? The winter, with the dragon. I don't care. I've seen it before. I don't care. I don't want to see any more of those. There's more unique stories that they've been avoiding to tell from our culture, from other cultures, that aren't the same stories over and over again. But we got 2 minutes left.
One of my historical plays, right, Ken?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Rocky, you did two of them. You did the George Washington and you did the John Brown.
Yeah, and I'm waiting on the third one. And
listen,
okay,
everybody, let me stop right now. Let me stop you right now. We got to start saying goodbye to people. We've got about a minute 30 left. I want to say thanks for calling in, Ashley, Denise, and
thank you
Lisa
so
Renee.
Much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies. We will talk to you soon. Thank you so much. Talk to you again. I want to say good
thank you
to Ken Sago. Brother
thank
Ken.
You,
thank you.
Carl.
Thank you, sister.
Brother Carl. Brother
thank
Carl
you. Thank
Goldfield.
You.
I'm sorry, brother.
Thank
we didn't
you for tuning in, brother.
We lost chance to get back to you, but we're going to have you back on. We're going to do a show where we're focusing on theater. So we're definitely going to have you back, brother Carl. I think that's you at 508. Right?
Look forward to it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, my brother. Mr. Ken Sagels, Ted Lang, I got to say thank you to these brothers. Ted, do we still have you on the line?
Yeah, I'm still here. Done. Thank you. I want to tell Byron I'm going to see him on Facebook.
That's right.
I'll see you on Facebook, Byron.
That's right, my brother. Amen. Keep the Underground Railroad Express going.
There you go.
All right.
Now. Thank
All
you,
right.
Eric, very much. I had a good time. I'm glad to reconnect with Ken. I hadn't seen him in a while.
We got to get together, Ted.
All right, Ken.
All right, hold on for one. Hey, Ted, see if you can hold on for 1 second. Ken, I want to thank you. Ken, who's 310-488? Who is that? We got to go, everybody. 10 seconds left. That's all right. I want to say thank you to everybody for calling in. Byron, safe. We got to go.
Peace and love always.
We talked up.
Fight the power.
Thank you, everybody. We're going to do it again.
All right, thank you.
We had a great show.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Thanks,
see you
Frank.
Later. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank
We're going to
you,
do this show
you.
Again with all these fantastic people. I'm Kay's son. Those are my friends. Byron Saunders. Wayne Gimmel was on assignment. Thank you to all those people. Thank you, Jerome Preston Bates, Ted Lang, Carl Sheffield, Lisa Renee Pitts, Ashley Denise Robinson, Ken Sagels, and Jerome Preston Bates. We'll all do it again. Love you guys. Talk to you soon. Take care.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.